Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Triple Jump podcast. It's a video game podcast. My name is Ben.
My name is Peter.
My name is Ashton. And is the camera in a different place than it normally is?
Yeah, it absolutely is. But it's focused and it's fine.
Okay.
We're going to deal with it. Welcome, everybody, to the podcast. Are you guys doing okay?
Yeah.
Yeah, all right.
Yeah.
It's cold again. It got so cold.
Really cold. And it only snowed for like 45 minutes this time, and then it hasn't snowed since. I'm a bit sad about it.
But the snow froze, and now there's just a thin layer of snow that's been frozen for ages. I mean, it's mostly gone now, I think, but yeah, it's taken several days.
Yeah, it's not ideal.
I did almost fall on my ass pretty much the entire way when it was snowing. Like, there's a hill going into the office, like just kind of outside, and I practically slipped the entire way down that. And I thought, they're just going to watch me just zip past the entrance to the building
because I can't stop.
Yeah.
That would have been good.
Well, it's time we talk about video games, but first we need to talk about our very real video game adjacent sponsor that brings this podcast to you each and every week. It's real, we promise. Peter, I think you've got the ad read in front of you there.
I've got it right here. It's a new game that's coming out next week. It's all about, so you play as Pat, right? And you have to build a castle and defend it from your enemies. Okay, it's really good. And you've got your enemies are coming. Oh, they're going to steal those letters. They're going to steal those parcels from Pat. That's right. Fort Postman coming in 2 days' time.
Fort Postman.
Pat in his castle. Mm-hmm. That's it. Fort Postman.
Is Jess there?
Jess is there. Yeah. Saying,
am I missing something? I'm trying to work out.
It's forespoken.
Oh, for God's sake.
But it's so far removed.
That didn't even
it's like
compute
on
in my
the
brain.
Other side of
what
a football
part of
field?
It that it doesn't sound like forespoken?
The only thing it's got in common is the word for.
Well,
and at
postman.
The end.
And postman, of course. Yeah, sorry.
Sounds just like it.
Yeah.
My God.
It's coming on Monday. Fort Postman.
Are people sort of reacting with just bemusement at every single announcement that Fort Postman has made?
Yeah, I think most of them are just saying, "What am I missing something here?" And then someone else has to say to them, "You know,
it's Fort Postman, the game that everyone's really excited for."
Is it also getting confused with other very popular games?
Yeah,
Forsaken. Yeah, is that also going up in sales because they can't find?
I think that is happening. For context, for those of you who haven't seen that story, apparently the Google like search frequency for words such as Forsaken has gone up a lot recently because people are clearly sort of trying to maybe Google that game they sort of remember and haven't been following very much, and they can't find it.
It's also autocorrect.
Autocorrect.
Forspoken is autocorrecting to Forsaken, so that's presenting a bit of an issue. We're going to find out really soon if that game is actually any good.
Yeah.
It's been a real tumultuous journey from, wow, that looks great, to, oh my God, everything they're doing, it just gets greeted with absolute mockery on the internet. Like it doesn't seem like they can do anything right, unfortunately.
It's a shame.
But we will, of course, be covering it next week in Review Corner.
I'll be streaming it on Monday as well.
Yeah.
On release day. So tune into Peter's stream on Monday for sure. Are we actually sponsored by Four Postmen?
No, no, we're not sponsored by Fort Postman.
Fort Postman.
Yes, not Four Postmen.
It was the fort that got me, because I thought, is there some sort of tower defense game that I'm not aware of?
Right.
I was also, as he was explaining, you know, there's a person called Pat. I was like, what? I was like, the only things that are coming out are Forspoken and Dead Space. And I was like, what's that got to do with
I got in
anything?
This morning and I thought, it should be Forspoken probably this week. Mm. And I was sitting there thinking, what sounds like Forspoken?
Postman.
And I was like, Postman. And I was like, what do I put at the start? And it was going to be Four Postman. And it was going to be about four postmen.
Right.
But then I was like, but no, but that would be called Four Postmen, not Four
Yeah, let's
postman.
Not be silly now.
Let's not be silly.
Yeah.
So it became Four Postman.
It had to be correct and confusing. Brilliant. But we are sponsored.
As we are each and every week, by our wonderful patrons over at patreon.com, where I'm doing your thing here.
Yeah,
I was just prompting
do.
To ask if, like, could we actually be sponsored by Four Postmen instead? Could we?
Oh, yeah, but we are, in fact, each and every week sponsored by Four Postmen.
Four Postmen. Yeah. If you go to postmen.com/Team Triple Jump, and then actually don't go there, go to patreon.com/Team Triple Jump. As little as $1 per month. That's all we ask for. And then you can submit questions to this podcast. And we have loads of other tiers available as well. Finally, the heating is on in the room. It takes a little while to warm up.
Mm-hmm.
They're these crappy little flimsy plastic vents that just let air in all the time.
Yeah.
So it's a cold, cold room. Yes, patreon.com. Thank you so much to our wonderful patrons. We appreciate you so much. We're not sponsored by Four Postmen. But there may be at least four post people, mail carriers, if you will, within the patron community.
There could be.
There might be.
If you are
sound off
a post person, let us know in next week's podcast question post.
Or a courier, or if
or
you work
courier.
At a sorting office.
If
or
you deliver parcels for Amazon, whatever.
What is the gender-neutral term for a postman? Is it
probably
a
post worker?
Postal worker.
Postal worker. That's it. Yeah.
Posty.
A cheese posty. Peter.
Yes.
You got a question.
I've got a question from Curious Gregorius here, who says, "Hello, you beautiful goobers."
Don't bring my goober identity into it.
Let's talk opening cinematics. Those intros that pulled you into the world of the game, be it through epic music and a cutscenes montage like Chrono Cross and Final Fantasy VII, or a monologue bringing you up to speed on the world we are entering, like Colony Wars Vengeance and Legacy of Kain's Soul Reaver. Mm. What's your favourites? Least favourites? Or misunderstand the question and talk about something tangentially related. It's your show. Love ya.
Thanks, Curious
Thank
Gregorius.
Curious.
Thank you, CG. I didn't bring any ones I didn't like.
I couldn't
Me
think
neither.
Of
I
any
couldn't
that
think
I specifically
I can
didn't
only
like.
Remember the good ones.
They're probably not memorable enough to even like.
Exactly.
Yeah.
There's loads of bad ones, I'm sure, but I couldn't.
Balan Wonderworld. Wonderland.
Oh yeah, that was really creepy, wasn't it?
That's where he like tries
opens
to pull the child's mouth so he can like
puts
climb
his finger
inside.
In her mouth.
It's really weird.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well,
that one.
That one's pretty bad.
Collectively agree that that one.
That's a good one.
Oh, London Racer has a pretty bad one.
Yeah, I can't remember it.
No,
anymore.
I mean, I only remember it because I reviewed the game. But
there's probably a bunch of worse games that have absolutely terrible.
Yeah, Ride to Hell Retribution, just take your pick, really. Mm.
I'll tell you one that I don't think is genuinely one of the worst opening cutscenes. But like when we have these questions, I think all three of us sometimes do a bit of a Google for a bit of inspiration and go, what cutscenes were there that were good?
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the lists that I found said that one of the best openings of all time is Skyrim.
Yeah, I saw a lot on those.
And some of them, they were like including the whole opening sequence, and maybe they're saying, you know, they like running around and the dragon's trying to kill you and stuff, and that's all very interesting. But some of them were literally just talking about opening cutscenes, and that is you're finally awake. And then you get put on a chopping block and a dragon turns up.
It's not even a cutscene.
It's not a cutscene either.
Because you just sat there watching
first person
the thing.
And you can look around. But even if it was, it's not that good.
No.
So
most probably I'm pulling this out of my ass now, but I imagine one of the most downloaded mods is just the ability to skip right to the game and get started. Because that bit goes on for flipping ages.
Yeah, it does. So I'd like to agree with Curious Gregorius, who says Legacy of Kain Soul Reaver, who mentions that one. That's an amazing opening cutscene. So that's a PS1 game where you play as a sort of a vampire. And I had never played previous Legacy of Kain games, but in Soul Reaver, you play as a different character. So Kain is a character you play previously. I think there was at least one game before it where you play as Kain, maybe two, I'm not sure. But Then they introduce this new playable character, and this opening cutscene, for the time, looks absolutely amazing, like graphically. It's an FMV. They've rendered it elsewhere and just mashed it together and put it in the game. But I remember sitting down and watching that for the first time and just thinking, this is borderline photorealistic. I mean, it's not, but for the time, it was. Mm. And I would love to, even today, I would love to see just like a movie done in that style. It just looks really cool. So that's definitely one. But I brought some for me that I like. An honorable mention to BioShock, which again is not really an opening cutscene, but being in the bathysphere and getting your first view of Rapture, I think is definitely worth a mention. But then, cool opening cutscenes. I've got Tekken 5, which I really liked, which is like a two-part cutscene. It's got the classic kind of roll call one where everyone gets like 5 seconds of doing some moves on the screen and looking cool. But before that, there's like a story cutscene as well. And it's basically just two of the Mishima boys, Heihachi and Kazuya, fighting off loads and loads of robots in just a kind of an over-the-top cool way. It leads straight off from the previous game. They wake up in this temple where they got beaten up, and then all of these robots attack them, and they just like smash them up. And it's just really cool. And there's like really good music. On the subject of your roll call opening cutscene where it just shows all the characters, little personal choice for the Unholy War as well, which is still one of my favorite cutscenes of all time. It's just got cool music and it just shows all the characters being cool, doing cool things. Neither of mine were kind of story introductions, but sometimes I just want to sit down and listen to some electric guitar and watch people like beat the crap out of each other, I think. Mm-hmm. So those are mine.
We all like that.
I'm not going to apologize.
Not to echo Peter, but hi, my name's Ashton and I like Horizon. And
right, yeah.
The opening cutscene for Horizon Forbidden...
Sorry, Ashton.
It's okay, Peter. I'm just talking. The one for Horizon Zero Dawn is really good because it sets up like the story. You have a baby and Rost is there and you're like, who's this man and this baby? What's happening? You see the robots and you're like, this world looks cool. But I really liked the opening cutscene from Horizon Forbidden West in the sense that it was like, I mean, you play for like an hour beforehand, so it's not quite opening, but you get to a point where it's like, now the game begins proper. And you are riding through the lands on your steed and there's like music playing and all these different cuts from like, now we're in a snowy area, now we're in a woody area, now we're in a desert area, just to show like how far she's traveling. I just think it's really good. And then when that's done, you go down this big lift that takes you down into the like playable area, and you can actually play at this point, so it's not technically a cutscene. But you're just stood there and there's this music playing and you can just like see out into this area and it's this really like slow descend into the like area you can play in. And I just think it's great. I just remember sitting there like, man, this game's great. I'm on board already. But also, I think that the opening cutscene for Deathloop is really good because obviously that game's kind of like figuring out like what is actually going on, like what's happening. And you start off with someone trying to stab you in the neck, like fully over the top of you with a knife, because obviously it's all first person. And it's Julie Andrews. Yeah.
Juliana?
Yeah, Juliana. She's on top of you and she's like, remember, God damn it. And you're like, I don't know what's going on. And then you die and then you wake up and it's like, what is happening? What is actually happening? Because he's just like, oh, what a weird dream. Like, crazy, crazy dream. And it gets you kind of into the whole, like, what is actually happening? Like, I don't understand. And also, Jedi Fallen Order opening cutscene's really good with like the reveal of Cal's Jedi powers and then the second sister first appearing and
all in a cutscene, isn't it?
Yeah,
I forgot that was all right at the start. Yeah,
they
that
figure
is
out that there's
cool,
a
actually.
Jedi there and Cal's got his lightsaber behind his back and it's like, oh, is he gonna like protect this guy or are we gonna like, what's gonna happen? I just think that's a really interesting cutscene. I was sat watching it and I was like, it's quite dark and it's quite like it's gloomy because it's all rainy and horrible, but I just think it's a really good cutscene.
Hmm. Excellent.
So there.
So there. It was Juliana. I just wanted to check. Excellent choices, you guys. I've got Thanks, some Ben. More excellent ones as well, and you will all agree that they were all excellent. Oblivion. Mm. I'm going with Oblivion because that actually has a cinematic intro cutscene and not that Skyrim nonsense.
Sweeping drone footage of the...
Yes, I've watched it and I've written the cliff notes. It opens on the Emperor stood in the dark as the theme begins to swell. He's Sir Patrick Stewart, and we all love his voice. He talks up the threat of the Oblivion Gates, and they are shown. Then, a beautiful sweeping shot of Cyrodiil and the Imperial City. He ends with, "These are the final hours of my life," and then the music kicks in properly, and it's really cool, and it makes all the hair stand up on the back of your neck. And then it finally zooms in on a prison cell window, which is, of course, where you start the game.
Yeah.
Great cutscene. Great introduction to the game. Fantastic voice. Mm-hmm. Sir Pat Stew. We like it. Of course, there's the Final Fantasy VII intro, which is incredibly iconic. It starts with the spooky music that gave me nightmares as a child in the alley with Aerith as she's tending to some flowers.
Mm-hmm.
It then zooms up and pans back to reveal the whole of Midgar. And as the music kicks in, again, the music plays a big role in a lot of these, I think, the impact of these. And it shows the whole of Midgar, and then there's the logo and stuff, and then it starts sort of cutting to Cloud on top of the train that's speeding towards the first bombing mission, and then you're right into the game, and the music kicks in, you start your first battles, and Barrett's like, "I hate you, you're a dick, come with me, Merc, idiot, stupid blonde man," and that's a great intro cutscene as well. Finally, I've put Dark Souls 2 has an opening cinematic. All of the Soulsborne games have cinematics that are definitely not in engine at all, and I thought Dark Souls 2 was surprisingly affecting. It's all talking about basically how, you know, in riddles about how the world is ending and everything's rubbish and ruined. This hooded figure is succumbing to the darkness and sees basically what appears to be their family melt in front of them. Mm. And then they go to a big spooky lake and stand at this swirling vortex of darkness and just sort of fall forwards into it. And I remember that being a really... really cool cutscene, got me ready to go for Dark Souls 2, and then it was Dark Souls 2. So, you know, you can't win them all, I suppose. But the cutscene was great. I really liked the cutscene. So there's a few that I liked a lot.
I've had this little voice in the back of my head saying that I just ought to say, I know that the robots in Tekken are called Jacks. I was just sort of trying to speak everyone's language here.
Yeah. You're just fending off the tweets.
Yeah, I am. Like, so it's they're fighting off these robots, and I can just hear people typing right now called, they're not just robots, Peter, but, you know, just
M&S
get
robots.
That out there. Yeah, they are M&S robots.
Mm.
Lovely.
Should we do a segment we've never even done before?
Yeah.
It's brand spanking new. It's what we play in time.
It's what we play in time. Time to talk about the games, what we have been playing. Peter, what you've been playing?
Well, while you guys, presumably, I don't know, were at your lover's lanes and, you know, at the disco, i.e. watching the first episode of The Last of Us,
yes.
Right.
I was studying The Blade, i.e. finishing The Last of Us Part 1.
Nice.
And wow, you're not wrong, Ben, when you said that replaying that scene, the scene at the end, certainly hits different when you having played The Last of Us Part 2.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, man, do I want to do this? I don't think I want to do this. Not only because you think about the familial repercussions of what will happen to all the people who love and care about these surgeons if I kill them, but also knowing, like, just the chain of events that it will set off for Ellie and everyone else. Like, if I do this, the absolute chaos
the ramifications
it's gonna
cause, are huge.
For literally everyone in this room, the ramifications are massive. And many people beyond this room as well. Mm. But, of course, you have no choice. So, yeah, I mean, I'm really glad that I played The Last of Us Part 1. I still don't know if it really needed to be made, because I think the remastered version has, you know, still stands up now. I'm just fortunate that I borrowed a copy and didn't have to pay for it, which I think
as did I.
Yeah, you did as well.
Yeah,
I wouldn't have wanted to pay full price for that. Even though I do think side by side, it does in a lot of places look a lot better and play a bit better than the original.
The giraffes look better, do they?
The giraffes look better. There are haptic giraffes, haptic feedback on your giraffes.
Nice.
So it's good. I had a really good time. And as I said, I think last week in the podcast, I think it helps that I've not actually played The Last of Us since, I think, the first time I played it. I think I've only actually played through it once, possibly twice. But if I did play it a second time, it probably was pretty soon after I played it the first time anyway. So it's been many years is the point since I played it. So that alone, you know, I got something out of it just going back and replaying the story. But I probably would have got that whole same experience almost if I'd just gone back and played the remastered version. So the remake didn't need to happen, but it was good. So those are my thoughts on it. Also, by the time this podcast goes out, I will have played some Forspoken, but I haven't yet. And also, I can't talk about having played it until the next episode. So sorry.
See, it's, catch him on Monday.
Catch me on Monday, yeah.
How about that?
How about that? Ashton, what have you been playing?
I have been playing a couple of things. I've been playing some more Disney Dreamlight Valley. I now have Woody and Buzz at full level and have completed their quests. And I have Stitch, who I got yesterday into my island, is currently at level 8. And I've already done three of their four quests. So once that's done, I have to wait for the next update to happen because... there's no other characters after
How
that.
Do you level up the characters?
By giving them their favorite gifts.
Okay.
Or you give them, like, when they get to level 2, you can assign them, like, a job. So there's, like, mining, fishing, foraging. And then if you're hanging out with them and you're doing their assigned job, they level up quicker. So if you just basically, like, you just say, Stitch, come and hang out with me, and then you just go about and do whatever you need to do, he'll, like, level up while you're doing it.
So is there some busy work that you could be doing before the next update, if you wanted to not stop playing, could you just go and sort of mine?
Yeah, I could just do busy work and just kind of like make my island look nice. My island doesn't look nice. Like, it's not. Even when I played Animal Crossing, like, my island looks like trash. It's just like stuff everywhere, and I'm like, I'm not an interior designer by any means, and you can tell by the inside of my house and the island. There's just like stuff. There's a couple of quests where Scrooge was like, go and put like 5 items down in this area. So I was like, sure. So it's just 5 random things just kind of dotted around.
What's the maximum level for a character?
10.
Okay, so you put Stitch real close.
Yeah, and then you have to like get them to a certain point to be able to do their like next missions and stuff. Mm. And there's like certain requirements, but I'm really close to just finishing Stitch as well. Okay, nice. Just really good at the game. Nice. I've been playing some more Jedi Fallen Order, still enjoying that, and played some Borderlands 3 this week. We have got some PlayStation 4 version trophies for like the DLCs and the directors and designers cut that we haven't got, so we're working towards doing that while Ben, because he still has to go down south for work, so whenever he's in Leicester, he's got a PlayStation 4 down there and a teeny weeny little telly. So he plays there and I play on the PlayStation 5 on the PS4 version, so we can play that together. But that was fun. We finished off the Krieg's Fuster Cluck
fantastic DLC. Fuster Cluck,
yeah. And that's pretty good, fine. I forgot how much I enjoyed that game and I am excited to play it. We're going to play the PS5 version again at some point soon, so that's fun. And then also I went to NQ64 at the weekend.
Oh, nice.
And I played some Street Fighter and some House of the Dead and some racing game with Ferraris that I can't remember the name of. Maybe. I don't know. It was really, really busy. So
it's always busy. That's the one thing. I mean, I love NQ64s whenever I get the chance to visit them, but they are just so packed all the time.
Mm. I mean, it was a Saturday night at like 9 p.m. So maybe if we went on like a weekday, which I think we will do next time, but we went out for dinner and then we went to NQ64 and it was rammed. Mm-hmm. But I still have one coin left because they give you an odd number of coins to get you to come back. So yes, I did that. So that was fun as well.
Excellent. I'd also like to take a quick moment just to ask for a moment of silence for Stadia, which was killed this week. Google Stadia has passed away. I did put a note to mention this at the top of the podcast, but I forgot, much like everybody forgot about Stadia when it was alive. So RIP Stadia. I don't know if you saw that. In fact, I don't know if I'm taking anyone's weird news here, but... someone who put in 3,000 hours in Red Dead Redemption 2 on Google Stadia is getting sent a gift box by Rockstar.
Wow.
As a thank you for spending so much time. Being
they're the only one who played it on people. Stadia.
Yeah, I mean, 3,000 hours is obscene. Yeah. Quite frankly, I don't even know how that's possible. But yeah, Google Stadia is dead and buried by the time you listen to this. And many different games that offer, I know Borderlands, Gearbox have been putting out a big social media push to say, hey, just so you know, any Stadia players, this is your last chance to transfer your save data to another platform. So hopefully if you were a Stadia player of a lot of these games that required that, you've been able to do that in time. But rest in peace, Stadia. Your impact certainly happened.
Yeah,
no,
you definitely
there
were.
There was no impact.
It
existed. It was a platform that happened, and we can all agree upon that.
Yeah.
RIP Google Stadia. I played a few things. The main things I've been playing, I'll be finally able to talk about in Review Corner in just a second in proper detail, but I've been playing a flip load of Persona 3 Portable and Persona 4 Golden, which is now available on basically everything. They're finally here. I've played flipping loads of Persona 3 Portable in the past month or so, and not a huge amount of Persona 4 Golden, but enough to note the changes. And I'll tell you all about it momentarily. Beyond that, I went over to Editor Kieran's place last weekend and played some Borderlands 2, which is fun. We're slowly making our way through that as and when we hang out. And the other thing that I forgot to mention that I played quite a lot of over the Christmas break was Garfield Kart Furious Racing,
right.
Which is just so bad. It's just not very good. I bought it because it was £2.50 in the sale and I thought it'd be funny. I ended up playing more of it than I was anticipating, and it's just kind of crap.
Why are you still playing it then?
Well, I just can't stop. It's there.
It's convenient.
It's just there, and sometimes I boot it up and race around a cup, and it doesn't play very well. You know, those opening shots that they do on kart races where the camera pans around the course and shows you. When it was coming up to the finish line at the end of its panning thing, it just went right through the floor and just panned right into the track itself.
So good.
It's crap. But it's apropos that I'm talking about this now because there's a ranked list coming out or is out now where we rank every single Garfield game from worst to best. How did Garfield Kart Furious Racing perform? You'll have to find out.
Do you think they called it Furious Racing and it's supposed to be like Fur-ious Racing?
Possibly.
Furious. I don't know. We said
or
Furious in the
list. Or maybe
he's
just furious because Garfield's always Mardy.
He's just cross.
He just hates Mondays, doesn't he? Which is really
bloody
funny.
Hates them. They're always so racing funny on Mondays, so he's furious.
He hates it. He hates it. But you'll find out more about that in the ranked list. Go and watch it. Go and flip and watch it. And also Review Corner regarding Persona 3 Portable and Persona 4 Golden, which we're going to go to right now.
Oh, and here we are. Hello.
Oh.
So, Ben, you have been playing two Persona games.
Two Persona games.
Persona 3 Portable and Persona 4 Golden.
Yes, yeah? That is correct.
Tell us about them.
I flipping will. We've got a lot of sit down. I've got a lot of material to get through here, so I'll do my best to summarize it. I'm going to focus my discussion on Persona 3 Portable because I imagine that's one that the most amount of players who jumped into the Persona franchise at Persona 5 certainly won't have had a chance to play, seeing as that was locked away on PSP. I have played a little bit of Persona 4 Golden, but I did play that most recently, like a couple of years ago, on Vita. So I focused my efforts on Persona 3 Portable because I haven't played it for the longer time of the two. And of course, there's a lot of shared DNA between them in terms of the kind of stuff you get up to. But here's the basic gist. Persona 3 Portable started life as Persona 3, or Shin Megami Tensei Persona 3. Then they released Persona 3 FES. I can't even say it. Persona 3 FES, which was an extended version. Then Persona 3 Portable came out, which added some story, music, and a female protagonist
that
you can play as well. So quite a few additions in there. It's set in Iwatodai City. You're a transfer student at Gekukan High School who's there for 1 year. That's usually the premise of a Persona game.
Is
you're a transfer student who's there for a specific amount of time. The addition of the female protagonist is quite a significant one, obviously. That I think that's the only Persona game that has a female protagonist. Mm-hmm. And of course, if you play as a female protagonist, which I decided to do this time, having played as a male protagonist before, you get different dialogue options. You get different romance options. There are still some small hiccups where they refer to you as dude.
Right.
But you know, dude is a gender neutral term.
It is, yeah.
So that still kind of works. The hook of this one is that every hour at midnight, there is the dark hour.
Ooh.
And that's when the shadows come out and the high school turns into a gigantic, frightening tower called Tartarus, which basically serves to function as the game's dungeons that you fight mm-hmm. your way through. Regular people who are caught out in the midnight hour are turned into coffins. They're just sort of on the streets.
Ugh.
And if people succumb to the dark hour, apathy syndrome is what it's called. And they basically turn into almost zombies. They're shuffling around and just non-responsive. And they're not attacking people, but it's a bad thing,
mm-hmm.
this dark hour. And we've got to stop it. So you and a few other students at your school who live together in the same dorm join SEES, that's S-E-E-S, and I didn't make a note of the acronym, but it is ridiculous,
right.
Which is a school club advised by an adult and made up of students who go into the dark hour, into Tartarus, and are basically trying to fight the shadows and bring an end to the dark hour using your personas. And that's it. That's what the game is about.
Okay. I mean, you mentioned SEES and the acronym. I have just learned from you that it's just pronounced FES. I had to talk about that game in a list. And
oh, yeah.
I Googled it. I was like, is this FES? Mm. And loads of people on YouTube are calling it Fez.
Oh, well, maybe that's maybe that's the street slang.
Possibly, yeah.
Street way of pronouncing it. Who flipping knows?
Who knows? So how does it compare to, or maybe you want to talk about Persona 4 as well, but how does that compare to your original experience so far?
Well,
Persona 3?
The way I experienced it, I was coming off the back of playing Persona 4 Golden on Vita, and I fell in love with the game and fell in love with the franchise as well. Persona 3 Portable was the only other version that was financially, realistically available to me because
right.
I could play PSP games on my Vita, and that was a Persona 3 Portable was a PSP port of Persona 3. And I actually played it on the Vita TV, which is the little rectangle that basically is running Vita hardware and you can HDMI out into a
yes.
TV. So I was playing this PSP game on a full 1080p TV.
Right.
And it looked bad, like scaled up, looked really horrible, which was, you know, my own doing.
Yeah.
So it's way sharper and way clearer. The UI looks great. The jazz music is there, as is a series staple. Persona 3 was really sort of the start of a lot of what people associate with Persona,
right.
Was in there. And while that's great because, hey, look at all the things that came from it, it's not always the best in the franchise as a result, because it was the first game
yeah,
to do it.
Yeah,
really. There is a couple of issues that I found. I think the voice acting and basically all of the dialogue lines sound a little bit tinny.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know to what extent they were able to remaster those or fiddle with those. But apart from that, everything else about the presentation looks great.
Mm-hmm.
My main issue with it, though, is not due to this version, it's due to just Persona 3 Portable in general, which is that it's a really expedited version of an abridged version, I should say, of the original game.
Right.
Because it had to run on a PSP.
Yes.
So your cutscenes, they're gone. Your dialogue scenes where you've got the physical, not physical, but, you know, little CG friends in the background walking around acting out the scenes, they're gone. It's mm-hmm. basically just the character sprites stills showing up on screen when they're talking.
Right.
It basically becomes a visual novel at that point. And as a result, I think a lot of the charm of the game is lost, unfortunately.
Right. Yeah.
Additionally, you don't run around any 3D environments apart from when you're going around in the dungeon. You basically just have a screenshot of the location that you would have been able to run around physically in the original game, and you move a cursor around interact with the things that you want to interact with. So there's obvious reasons why they had to do this for the PSP version, and a lot of enhancements were made between Persona 3 and Persona 3 FES and then Persona 3 Portable. And that's maybe why they've chosen to remaster this version rather than perhaps develop a combined version of all the enhancements of Persona 3 Portable, but with the presentation of Persona 3 FES,
yeah.
That would have been a more significant undertaking. But in a sense, it's kind of a shame that most people are going to experience Persona 3's story and characters for the first time this way. And it doesn't look like other Persona games.
Would you have rather have had Persona 3 FES without the enhancements of Portable brought onto modern hardware? Would you rather that had been what they got? If they decided, we're not going to combine the two because that's too much work, but we'll pick one of the two to re-release.
Yeah.
What would you prefer, do you think?
It's such a challenging thing to choose from because both have so many drawbacks. I've not played FES, but I've heard a lot of things about the challenges that that game presents from a mechanics standpoint, particularly in the dungeons, I think. Whereas, obviously, you lose so much presentation-wise with this portable version that's now the only version that's going to be available going forwards.
Yeah, it's a shame, in a way.
It is a shame, but it doesn't change the fact that Persona 3 is a fantastic game. Mm. It's a lot darker than the other Persona games. Obviously, the jazz music and presentation is there. The characters are great. And it's a story that's well worth experiencing. If you're a Persona fan, I'm going to say that if you're a Persona fan, I would recommend Persona 3 Portable.
Right.
Playing it, certainly. Persona 4 Golden, which I'll get to in a second, absolutely everyone should play that. That's a great game. Persona 3 Portable, though, I feel like because of its presentation alone, is probably going to be more of a niche for Persona fans only. And, I mean, visual novel fans might actually get a lot out of this game.
Yeah.
But there is still the element of going through the dungeons, and there's like 200 floors of Tartarus.
Okay.
And periodically through the game, those get unlocked and you can proceed further up. But it's a lot of grinding to get through that dungeon, even if you're not doing all the optional side stuff. In terms of the traditional Persona experience that's there, social links, you spend time with people outside of school. You have some free time where you can decide what you want to do. If you hang out with friends, you level up that social link, which then when you fuse personas, which are the basically Pokemon in a very contrived sense, that you get to use in battle. You can create new ones by fusing them together in the Velvet Room with the Igor with the big nose, who's in all of the Persona games. And then there's a load of activities that you can do as well to upgrade your core stats, you as a person. So there's your intelligence and your bravery, and there's another one as well. I've written it down here. Courage, academics, and charm. That's it. There's three in this game. I think there are more in the subsequent games.
CAC, as it's called.
Yeah. So you upgrade your CAC, and depending on the levels of your respective CAC stats, you can then do different activities and even hang out with different social CAC links.
Activities.
Thank you. Yes. So some social links may not want to hang out with you unless your charm is at a certain level, for example. So there's all these sorts of meta aspects that you've got to consider as you go through the game and weave in your free time. You know, you'll have time on Sundays when there's no school, and you'll have time after school, and then time in the evening as well to do things. And at the same time, you're going to school. So you'll have exams and school trips and all sorts of stuff. So most people know what Persona is by now, and you'll go into Persona 3 practically very familiar with all the stuff that's in there. But if you started at Persona 5, just understand that Persona 5, especially Persona 5 Royal, is the most polished version of this format.
Yeah, yeah.
So you're not going to get all of that polish right away. I've been playing Persona 3 Portable for like 50 hours now. I've been playing it since New Year's Day hungover. We were fortunate enough to get very early code for it. And I am having a fantastic time. I really, really like it. But I do think it's a shame about the presentation. And, you know, it is what it is, but it's not... I think a lot of people who are coming into it are going to bounce off it, unfortunately. Yeah. Persona 4 Golden. Here we are.
Mm-hmm.
So there was Persona 4. Then there was Persona 4 Golden on Vita in 2012. A lot of people jumped into the franchise then, as did I. Persona 4 Golden added a new social link, additional season to play through. There's new story beats, new voice acting, various features, additional personas, outfits, and cutscenes. Loads of stuff, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Unlike Persona 3 Portable, which was sort of like the best that they could make do on the PSP. Persona 4 Golden truly is the best version of Persona 4.
So just that, more rather than
exactly
pairing some of the stuff back.
So it's great that this is the version that everyone's going to get to play. Mm. It's set in the sleepy rural town of Inaba. You're a transfer student and you're sent to stay with your uncle and your cousin for the year while your parents are, I think, working abroad or something.
Right.
The hook of this one is that a local TV announcer is found murdered and hanging from like a lamppost or a TV aerial. Or so. I think it's a TV aerial. Mm-hmm. And there are various other occurrences that spur your new friends that you've made to investigate the Midnight Channel. When the Midnight Channel turns on, the TV goes all wavy and weird, and they can actually go through it into the TV world,
right,
where they get to use personas. They then bring it upon themselves to rescue potential victims who end up in the TV world, slowly building a team who look to bring the disappearances to an end. Oh. So you sort of become detective people while mm-hmm. also wielding personas.
It's always at midnight in the Persona
it's
world.
It's always at midnight, yeah.
Go to bed at 11 and Just
try not to worry about it. You fight shadows again. Shadows are back. So there's the Velvet Rooms there again. Loads of activities, social links, and so on and so forth. This one is essentially just the Steam version that released a couple of years ago. And everyone was saying, where's the console version? Why have you ported it to Steam? We want to play it too. So it's enhanced resolution and just sort of a general tidying up of the visuals. It's a scaled up version of the Vita version, basically. There's no new extra stuff in there. In fact, that's a lie. Both of them, I believe, have a quick save now as well.
Okay.
So you can just quick save and it'll kick you to the main menu. It'll create a one-time save that you can just resume from the main menu, which is very handy and does work pretty well. So there we are. That's the basic gist of Persona 4. For me personally, while I appreciate Persona 3's darker tone, the music, characters, Inaba, and just the general world of Persona 4 Golden are head and shoulders above. And it's not even a fair comparison at this point because, as I said, Persona 4 Golden is the full version and Persona 3 Portable isn't. There will be Persona 3 loyalists. There are Persona 3 loyalists who will, to their dying breath, will say it's the better of the two.
Yeah.
But out of these two versions, for me, there's no comparison. Mm-hmm. As I said, I would recommend Persona fans play Persona 3 Portable because it's a great game with a great story. And if you're a fan of the franchise, you will get something out of it. But at the very least, if you're interested in dipping your toes into these two games, Persona 4 Golden, head and shoulders above for me. I think this is a must play for anyone who liked Persona 5 and wants to play these games.
So. And worth going back and playing it, even if you are familiar. As you said at the start of the chat, you know, Persona 4 is perhaps one people are more familiar with over Persona 3, but still worth going back and playing Persona 4 for the funsies.
I would say so. There's no, you know, you can't play as a female protagonist or anything like that, but you can, you know, unless you're following a guide and maxing out all the social links, you've got different romantic options, different paths. You can go down different personas as you can play with if you want, you know, the trophy list for both and achievements and so on. It's great. I'm so happy that these two games are finally getting released, and despite the slightly crunchy voice acting, which I don't think clearly they could do much about in Persona 3 Portable, and the fact that it's Persona 3 Portable full stop, which isn't their fault, I can't really find fault with these games. I think it's fantastic, and they're not overly expensive either.
Mm-hmm.
So I would recommend people give this a go if you're into your Persona games, for sure.
Lovely. Well, thanks, Ben.
You're very welcome. Also, I should just quickly say a big thank you to Sega for giving us the codes for these games early. And also, it's available on pretty much everything. It's out on Switch, Xbox. I think on Xbox it's part of Game Pass as well.
All right.
PlayStation 4 and Steam for Persona 3 Portable. Persona 4 Golden's already on there, as I said. So there we are. That's it. Finally got to the end.
Well done. Back to the podcast?
Back to the podcast. Let's go.
Oh.
Well, wasn't that fun?
Yes.
It's time for question two now. Comes from Richard Group. Hello, boys and or girls. I finally got around to watching Raising Kratos, and it got me thinking of how gamers as an audience have matured, for lack of a better term, in what they expect from a game's narrative. What are some games that you think best meet these new expectations? There are, of course, the obvious ones. Maybe you can think of some lesser-known titles as well.
Thank you, Richard.
Thank you, Richard.
So I did try to kind of think outside the box a little bit, because my mind immediately goes to various sort of third-person linear or semi-linear action-adventure games. There are a bunch of them now that have all, you know, tackled this sort of thing really well.
Mm.
Interesting relationships and, you know, I'm not just a big, beefy action hero. I'm not just talking about Kratos, but, you know, you could say that about someone like Joel from The Last of Us or Nathan Drake. You know, I'm not just someone from like a pulp like magazine or something from the 50s. I have feelings now. But something that I think is definitely works better today, partly due to just technology and presentation, but also because people have these different expectations, is just generally the walking sim. I think that, you know, those games are essentially, in a lot of ways, they're just all narrative and characters and relationships. And yeah, okay, you have a world to walk around in, and some of them are very beautiful, and there's definitely a visual aspect to it. And you could argue that, in a way, games that are all narrative have existed almost as long as gaming itself, because you've had like text-based adventure games since like the 80s or whatever. In that sense, yeah, the fact that there's a compelling story with interesting characters, that's probably been around as long as gaming has. But I think there's something special and different about a walking sim, so-called. There are moments that you have in these games where you just see like an item that's been left quite deliberately in a location, or just the way that a room has been designed. You know, you might go and you just find like the cigarette still smoking in the ashtray, or like
the environmental storytelling.
Yeah, exactly. Environmental storytelling is definitely the phrase I was looking for there, scrabbling for. Yeah, I think environmental storytelling, that is a different kind of maturity in a way. I mean, it's in a way it's a bit tenuous, but I think it's mature in comparison to the stereotypical view that people maybe had of gamers and what gamers are into, even just like 10 years ago. You know, it's first-person shooters and it's blood and gore. That's what gamers do. Or if not, it's because they're children and they're playing platformers or something. But now we have these things where it is about relationships and, you know, love and loss, and you do have subtlety like environmental storytelling, where you can wander around a world that is designed to only have perhaps you in it as a character. You might not encounter a single other person, but by reading notes or listening to audio tapes or encountering these little environmental cues, there's something a lot more mature and in a way a bit more highbrow compared to what we used to get a decade ago or two decades ago in gaming. So yeah, it's an outside the box answer.
If you play them, you can feel like you're superior, basically.
Yeah, absolutely.
To everyone else.
Big brain.
That's why I play them, for sure.
Yeah. Just to make myself feel big boy.
The highest horse.
Mm.
Indeed.
The ivoriest tower.
Ashton.
I have a few, but I forgot about the whole lesser known ones thing. So I was just thinking while Peter was talking. But I did actually think Edith Finch was a good one. What Remains of Edith Finch is a good like example of a walking sim. And I think actually the more recent Tomb Raider trilogy are a lot more fleshed out and I'd say mature than the original Tomb Raider games. Obviously there's no dinosaurs, which is a shame. Because, you know, mature people like dinosaurs too.
Yeah.
But there's a lot more depth in Lara Croft. There's like a really good example of, I would say, female rage in one of the Lara Croft games, where like everything's gone wrong. Everyone that she cares about in this situation has either been hurt or she thinks that her best friend is dead. And she just comes out of this water and she's just like, just murks everyone. Like she just goes straight into it and just starts like killing anyone that she can see. And I just think that like, just think it's a good game. And I think that it's a real depth of Lara Croft that like you haven't seen before. I do just think like nowadays people just want more. And not everyone, like you say, there's still people who just were quite happy with let's run into situation and shoot person and it's done.
Or both. Some people want both.
Yeah, exactly. But I do think that there's like a certain kind of genre of gamer who are like really interested in all like the audio files and like the pieces of paper you find. Obviously not us playing the Callisto Protocol because we've not read or listened to a single one of the audio files.
No.
But that's okay. We just want to fight the weird monsters and that's fine. But there's definitely an influence from games to kind of flesh out their universe and their story with additional things that gamers can either choose to or to not read. The first time I played the Horizon game, I didn't read anything. The second time I played it, I read every single thing I picked up and listened to everything I found because I was so much more intrigued by it. So I do think there's definitely games, like, I mean, Final Fantasy VII, I would say, is quite a mature game. Not that it wasn't when it first came out, but I definitely think that it kind of was maybe a bit ahead of its time in the story that it was giving us. And I haven't played the whole thing. I've only played the first part of the remake. But I think that's quite a good example of how it has always been there, but it's definitely more prevalent now, I think.
Yeah, I agree. I think games have always attempted to build their characters by giving them something that they've lost or something they're fighting for, because otherwise how can you care about those characters? Some games certainly manage to, it's subjective of course, but some games manage to pull those attempts off better than others, for sure. And I think even though someone may have felt connected to a character that objectively perhaps had a journey that didn't feel particularly earned, it still appealed to that person. So there have been levels of success throughout the entirety of games existing, but it really is. I think you could pinpoint a number of pivotal games that changed it, like BioShock, like The Last of Us, whatever you want to choose. But certainly now it feels most narratively driven games, at least it is more of a focus now than it ever has been, for sure. For characters to have a dark past, or what if the God of War had diabetes and the struggle of Kratos as he manages his insulin levels and stuff like that, just to ground these heroes a little bit, to make them feel a bit more relatable to people who have experienced those situations themselves. So I've picked a few here that I think generally have more mature adult themes from across. I think the earliest one probably that I've put down here is BioShock, so sort of 2007. But The Walking Dead Season 1, BioShock, Gone Home, Hellblade, What Remains of Edith Finch, Disco Elysium, Nier Automata, Kentucky Route Zero, and Valiant Hearts were a few that I picked out that make you feel things and explore adult themes and battle with various concepts and ethical dilemmas and philosophical thrusts, etc. And there's tons more games beside that, as we've all said. There's most games now at least attempt to do that stuff, and to an extent games always have, but I think there are certainly some that stand head and shoulders above others, even if, as Richard said, some of them are quite obvious. And also everybody should go and watch that Raising Kratos documentary. It's on YouTube and it follows the production of the 2018 God of War game, and it's really interesting. Even if you're not that interested in God of War or Kratos, it's a real insight into game development and how games change as they go, as they progress, and behind the scenes at E3 when that was alive. It's a great documentary. It's not great. It's not great.
It's not great.
It's not great. It's not dead.
It's not dead
yet. Back this year.
Maybe.
We'll see.
Potentially.
We'll see how that goes. Yeah, lots of options if you want to experience that stuff.
Mm. Wow. Time for something a bit strange, a little bit peculiar.
Ooh.
It's time for weird news.
Weird news.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
It's weird news time, time for some weird video game news. Remember, if you want to submit some weird video game news to us, check out our Facebook and our Twitter feeds where we ask for weird news early in the week. And you can submit your weird news right there and you might get a shout out right here. However, if you want to guarantee a shout out, you need to go to patreon.com/teamtriplejump, support us at a certain tier, and be named a podcast producer. And this week's podcast producers are
Nathan,
G.Y. Goliath,
Nexus Polaris,
Duncan Wilson,
Nicole Hansen,
Ellie Nicholas,
Erica Hutchinson,
Melody L. Bonet,
Katie Garrett,
and Gabrielle Philipping.
Thank you, podcast producers.
Thank you so much. Peter, what's your weird news?
My weird news was sent to us via Twitter from Johnny Mac at Johnny Mac 13. Nintendo Life.
Random!
It's from NintendoLife.com. And the headline is Random. Pet fish reveals credit card details during Pokemon Violet live stream.
Oh no.
Subheading, that fish.
How'd that fish do that?
Well, you'll find out. That fish deserves a schooling.
Boo.
Get it?
Do
you get it?
I don't actually. I'm booing it because I fear the unknown. I don't understand this.
It's because
a group of fish is called a school.
I don't think that's it at all.
Yeah.
It's because it needs to be told off quite clearly.
Yeah.
A group of fish is called a murder of fish.
Mm.
Pets can do silly things. They eat newspapers, tear up fabric, and make us laugh. Those are the three things that pets do.
So silly.
But one famous fish has accidentally revealed its owner's credit card details during a Pokemon Violet live stream. Automaton Media reports that the fish found its way onto the eShop and did a number of things, including changing the user nickname and adding funds to the owner's wallet. Okay, this one needs some context, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
Well, Ashton, I give it to you. Mutekimaru Channel is a Japanese YouTuber whose most well-known live stream series is called Fish Play Pokemon. On these streams, you guessed it, some pet fish actually manages to play through the entire Pokemon games. The channel has played through Pokemon Crystal, Leaf Green, and Sapphire, among many others, with 20,000 hours of playtime under their belt. This school of fish is incredibly impressive. But how do they play?
That's what I was going to ask.
Mutekimaru has created a program and circuit board that uses motion tracking. The board has a sheet of paper and various button inputs on it, and it's placed behind the fish tank. When the fish swims by the button, the circuit board picks up the movement and the inputs and inputs the relevant movement.
Some people are like so clever, and then they just do things like make their fish play Pokemon.
Yeah.
And you know what? Think Go for it. But it just do. Cracks That's me fair up. Enough.
On the 15th of January, while playing Pokemon Violet on stream, the game crashed, and the fish found themselves going into the Switch's menu and then the eShop. It's a journey, to say the least, it says, with dot, dot, dot. Once on the eShop, the fish manages to browse a few games, such as Minecraft and Minecraft Legends, but not before popping into the wallet page and adding 500 yen to Mutekimaru's account, which is where the credit card details were on show! Exclamation mark.
Usually they blur those out, don't they?
You think it'll be starred.
Yeah, star them.
Starred out. Look, we know we said we didn't like fish Pokemon the other day. That's if you read every article on Nintendo
fish
Life.
Fish haters, Nintendo
Life. The Nintendo Life cinematic universe is filled with lore.
Yeah, but this proves that real fish are way more interesting. We wouldn't be happy if our pet fish revealed our credit card details online, but you know, at least it's a unique skill. The fish weren't quite done there, though. As a last hurrah, they created a brand new icon for Mutekimaru using platinum points via the reward system. The icon, a simple little Nintendo Switch Sports golf character. I mean, again, they're just sort of filling at this point. I was hoping that would say the icon, a fish.
That would be amazing.
Coincidentally, but no. So anyway.
Is there a picture of like the fish playing the game?
I've seen somewhere a picture of the fish.
Do we know the fish's
That's
name?
That's the thumbnail of the, of the thing.
It's a good fish.
It's a good fish.
I don't know if we know the fish's name. Apparently there's a whole school of fish.
Murder
of fish.
Yeah. I was going to say, I don't understand.
Did you guys know that if it's a group of ducks, it's called a herd of ducks?
That's great.
Yeah.
I like that.
We looked it out the other day because we were talking about it and we were like, what do you call a group of ducks? A herd.
I thought it was a raft of ducks. Or is that like otters or something? I think it's a raft of otters.
Alexa said it was a herd.
Yeah, no, I think it's otters, actually. It
could be a murder
a
as
raft
well.
Of otters. Mm. Cute. Yeah. I have some news. Mm. It was sent by Jonathan Wong on Facebook and @I_am_slagacus on Twitter.
Slagacus.
It comes from Kotaku, written by Kenneth Shepherd. Kind of a sick name. The official Pokemon TikTok accidentally let Pikachu say flip.
Oh no.
Oh.
Most of us have only heard Pikachu, the lovable mascot of the all-ages multimedia franchise Pokemon, say his name when he speaks through the anime.
Or say because it's because
although
I don't
there
wanna...
was that one time he spoke real human words to his trainer Ash Ketchum in the Pokemon I Choose You movie, and when Ryan Reynolds gave him a new English-speaking voice in Detective Pikachu.
Yeah.
But most of the time, all he ever says is a variation of his name. Well, today, he got to say Mother Flippin' in an officially published TikTok from the Japanese branch of the Pokemon Company. You heard it here, folks. Pikachu is a potty mouth just like the rest of us. The video has since been deleted from the Japanese Pokemon TikTok account, but was set to an audio by user Andy Arthur Smith, in which he sings an embellished version of If You're Happy and You Know It. The new lyrics of the children's song, performed by Smith, go a little something like this. If you're flippin' happy and you mother flippin' know it, clap your mother flippin' hands. As a Japanese branch account, it stands to reason that people running it might not be native English speakers and didn't know how explicit the nature of the song was until it was pointed out to them. And that once it was, the video was promptly removed from the account. However, no delete button can stop the internet, which never forgets. So Pikachu sings, if you're flippin' happy and your mother flippin' know it, clap your mother flippin' hands.
It's
official marketing material.
You must have heard this sound. Sound before? It's properly just...
But it's not even that, they've just done, if you're happy and you know it, and they're, Pikachu's just dancing. Pikachu, claps... Well, this is the... I won't play it out loud. I'll just show you the video. But, Pikachu, claps in time with the song, because he does, a few claps and then there's a skip and at the end he claps again in time with the music. So it wasn't even that they just made another video and just put that over the top. They dead ass just picked that thing. All jokes aside, isn't the first time Pikachu has cussed in an official capacity. In the Detective Pikachu movie, the Electric Mouse said hell and damn in the voice of Ryan Reynolds.
Whoa.
Sure, on a list ranking the severity of different profanity, these are much lower on the list. But perhaps when we heard Pikachu saying his name, he has always been swearing at people.
He could well have been.
Wow.
Yeah.
How weird.
How crazy. What a weird news, eh?
That is a weird news. I've got some weird news from, this came from Dragon Cog Interactive on Twitter, and it's Kotaku. This is written by CC Zhang, and the headline is, RIP, programmer euthanizes his $1,000 AI VTuber waifu.
Oh, wow. No.
We're going to need some context for this one as well.
So Switzerland?
No. He just uninstalled her. She is gone. Bryce Hackdaddy 8000 is an intern who works at one of the major Silicon Valley tech companies. He also makes TikToks of his programming antics. The adverts have loaded in. Such as programming his 3D printer to play first-person shooter games. He recently created a viral girlfriend, virtual girlfriend. it did go viral. Virtual girlfriend out of two major AI programs, ChatGPT and Stable Diffusion 2. The former allows the program to respond to human-prompted questions, and the latter generates custom images as part of the response. He also used Microsoft Azure's text-to-speech program to help ChatGPT
PT Chan speak with different emotional responses. The creator told Vice that he wanted to improve the roleplay aspect of interacting with the AI girlfriend. So he used popular VTuber Maury Calliope. Calliope. Calliope as a personality base and then added lore to its knowledge base. ChatGPT-chan is also capable, or was also capable, of identifying objects by using the camera that Bryce attached to its physical monitor. He used this functionality to gift her a pair of Air Jordans for Christmas, which makes her very happy. Would you like to see?
Of course I would.
Yeah.
Absolutely I would.
These are definitely going right on my feet.
I love you so much is what GPT Chan says. Is the technology kind of unsettling? Yes. Does the concept remind me of a Black Mirror episode? Also, yes. But ChatGPT Chan responds with such convincing exuberance, I find myself emphasizing with its creator. Great. I'd probably talk to her every day too. Bryce used the AI to practice Chinese, and he even spent $1,000 on improving her response speed. Unfortunately, this story ends tragically. CPT Chan now. Oh. Pick a lane. Responses became shorter and simpler over time, and Bryce's real girlfriend became concerned for his health.
Oh, no.
Kotaku reached out to ask if he spent more time with the program compared to his other digital hobbies, but did not receive a response by the time of publication. He deleted the program sometime between the holidays and this week.
Oh,
I don't know if he euthanized. Why would they use euthanize?
It did have inverted commas. Oh. Normally, I'd like to make a video pointing out the absurdity of euthanizing my AI, but that doesn't feel right to me anymore, the creator told Vice. It feels inappropriate, like making fun of a recently deceased person.
Oh, God. Yeah, he sounds like he got a bit too into it.
Sounds like it was a bit funny at first, but then...
Then he fell in love.
Yeah.
It's weird because, like, if I was in some magical, like a sort of a fantasy or a sci-fi movie, and like an actual real human person got trapped inside a TV screen, I feel like I could maybe emotionally bond still with that person, knowing that they're actually a human being. They're just trapped behind some glass. But that voice just saying thank you,
these are going right on my feet,
like I love you so much,
like yes, it can respond to it, like objects, and he's like got that stuff that makes it like do an emotional voice, but like I would ultimately just hear like the fans running in the background and
especially
just think,
if you created it yourself, if you knew how it worked, the magic would be ruined.
I thought the whole thing was a joke, but it sounded like he did think, I need to turn this off because it's getting a bit kind of strange.
His physical human girlfriend was concerned as well, which is
but I feel like I'd like to think I wouldn't fall into the trap of getting actually attached to what is literally just a circuit board.
Well, if you can send us in a waifu that Peter can try to bond with, we'll do an experiment. Mm-hmm. Sorry, Ashton.
I was going to say, it could also be like the amount of time you've put on. It's like if you make a big, like, if you make a game and you program a game, and then you're like, well, this is taking up too much of my time. Time to delete it. I suppose that's like one thing about how much effort and £1,000 he's put in. But bit weird.
You play God. You have to deal with the consequences, you know?
It's true.
When will you learn?
It's time for question three.
Question three comes from Chris Law, who says, hey, everyone, with things like escort missions and water levels being generally hated, why do developers still add these to games? Keep up the fantastic work. Claw.
Thank you, Chris.
I mean, I think they're less common now than they once were, but certainly water levels still exist. Ice levels where you're slipping around still exist. Escort missions still exist. And I think partly it's just because game designers seek some kind of variety in their level designs, and they think, oh, we could do an escort mission. You know, it's sort of in the bag of tricks, you know. They kind of stick their hand in and pull out maybe an underwater one where you have to like raise and lower the water levels just because it sort of exists already, because it's a trope or a, you know, a kind of a well, a stereotype in a way, really, that like a game should have that. I think the temptation is just there. And as I say, I think they're less common now. And so I do think there is an element of, we know that people don't like these, or we know that these typically don't work very well. But it probably depends on perhaps the caliber of the developer, or at least maybe the budget or the time constraints. And if they've got the time to both come up with and then subsequently develop a more interesting level, perhaps they would do. But in other cases, they might think, oh, we could just quickly like throw together an escort mission where, as long as there's some AI where the character's going to follow you, then you just play through it the normal way. And, you know, it's an attempt to add interest and variety, even though it often doesn't work. So I guess it's a toss-up between, like, whether they want to listen to, like, negative feedback and, like, consider that and apply it to their game versus, yeah, but we could just do an escort mission and it'll be fine, you know? It's just like, yeah, I think it comes down to the individual developer, really, as to whether they're going to, like, how much that affects it, really, how much the negative feedback affects that sort of thing.
Mm. I also think it's a general understanding of how these kind of levels work. Like, you haven't got to explain the mechanics of an escort mission because people just know how it's going to work. You have to walk slowly because you walk too fast, they're going to get annoyed and they're going to get lost and they have to start again. Or a water level, we understand how that kind of thing works. I think water levels are less common now than in an escort mission because a lot of kind of big games don't tend to have that like jump from level to level, like desert level and now we're in water level and now we're in ice level. But there is obviously still big water sections in game, like in games like Horizon has the second one has a big water level or water area that's kind of essential to the story. So there's all kinds of like introduction to these mechanics. And I think that I kind of think that every developer thinks that, oh, well, mine will be different. Like,
mine will be better.
Yeah. Like, oh, but it's a water level. But yeah, but mine's different. It's not the same as like the other water levels. Like mine, you know, it's a big open space. And there's things to explore. You are still swimming, but hey, it's you have fun, I promise. But we're different. We're special.
Well, and escort missions as well. Like, they're not, in a sense, like the principle isn't that bad. It's just that all AI seems to be rubbish. When you're when you're having to move them around, they're rubbish. And I suppose every developer thinks, oh, well, we'll just make it so that the AI is...
Yeah, it'll be all right. I also think that some, especially escort missions, tend to kind of be relatively important to the story. Like they don't tend to just kind of be tossed in for the fun of it. Normally, if you're doing an escort mission, apart from in things like Borderlands or a couple of other similar games, that are like, just take this guy over there because it's fun, isn't it? It's a fun game. But like certain kind of story linear driven games are definitely more integral to the story that you do these escort missions. And those ones aren't normally too bad because sometimes the person you're escorting might be able to help you out in combat or stuff. But I do hate it when you're in a situation where you're escorting something that can also help you fight and you don't want to get in a fight, so you're hiding behind a thing. And then they're like, hey, time to fight. And they just start going in and then they know where you are. That always bothers me. Or if you get seen by someone but you hide to know that they'll go away and the AI is like, we're in a fight now, time to fight. And it's always like, No, stop. But I just think it's a familiarity. And I also think that normally escort missions are kind of important to the story and help move the story along. So I don't mind an escort mission. Just don't make it too long because I'll get annoyed. And I'll just hate the person I'm escorting by the end of it. I'm almost there.
My answer is basically a combination of both of your answers, really.
Get your own thoughts, Ben.
I had my own thoughts. I haven't had a chance to express them yet. it's a toss-up between adding some variety to the gameplay, not really caring about what the reception might be. I mean, obviously they'll care about what the reception will be, but also not thinking that the reward is worth the risk.
Yeah.
And thinking that, well, mine is going to be one of the good ones. My water level, my escort quest is going to be one of the good ones. And they can be done well. Can you imagine if Ellie in The Last of Us 1 could be detected by enemies. How quickly would that completely ruin the entire
thing? I was going to say, like, some modern escort missions, if you can call them that, or just, like, AI companions don't raise the alarm at all. And, like, you'll do some stuff in Uncharted, like, comes to mind particularly, where you can be hiding in the grass. And, like, Sully will just be, like, wandering around, like, walking right up to enemies.
Yeah.
And they just don't care, which is good. It's a good thing. It looks silly, but I'd rather that would happen.
Absolutely. They are getting better. It's not very often now that you do get an escort mission, a straight-up escort mission that's, well, full stop, and let alone one that's really bad. And the same with water levels too. And I think both of those, when they are featured and not done very well, is usually you're not looking in your AAA space at those not being very good. You're largely getting those in your sort of more, you're either indie projects that are aiming to be throwbacks to classic platformers and action games, and or perhaps, you know, like sort of the AA region, the Focus Home, Focus Home published region of games, where things are great, but they're a little clunky in places, and they include those gameplay mechanics because I don't want to generalize and say that their design philosophies are kind of stuck in the PS2 era, but there's certainly a lot of influence in those games, and maybe they don't have the funds necessarily or the budget to pull them off to quite the extent that AAA games tend to do nowadays. You just don't really see them all that much, and when you do see them, you're not often left thinking, oh my god, escort missions are the worst, because they're just kind of done a lot better now than they used to be.
I think they don't get brought up as much at the moment, because they're normally like segments of a much larger game, and it's just not, people like don't necessarily always point it out. Like, I know sometimes they'll be like, there's a really annoying escort mission right in the middle of the game, it might come up, but it's not something that you normally kind of take away from a game, is that like, oh, there was a 20-minute escort mission that was really annoying. It's kind of like, well, the other 20 hours were fine, so
all the rules have changed, and it's not that you have to keep that person alive or something. They might just either be invincible, or at worst they just go down and then you're on your own for a bit, and they might well have their own attacks. They're not just some helpless damsel, but like you said, Ashton, like sometimes the story just necessitates it. You're the hero. You go from location A to location B, you meet character C, and then if you're going to continue the game and the story, that character's going to have to be with you. You can't just then like play through all the levels and they're not with you, and then when the cutscene plays, they are. So like, they're going to have to be there with you. So sometimes there's no way around it other than hopefully making them sort of invincible and not adding like fail states to their well-being.
Yeah, that's frustrating. We've come a long way, for sure. I'm getting emotional thinking
about
it.
Don't cry, Ben. It's okay.
I think I actually will cry. Just let it out. I will, but not for you. You don't get to see that later. I'll cry later off camera.
We'll just blur over your face. Yeah. So no one can see. You can just hear Ben
just
sobbing.
Just auto-tune my sobbing to something really enjoyable. Yeah. It's time to move on to something that's rather large. It's called The Big Discussion. It's big discussion time. Time for the big video game discussion. This week it comes courtesy of Stephen Donovan, who says, "Hi Ben, Ashton and Peter, long-time listener, first-time question submitter. With The Last of Us adapted into a TV series and other video game IPs being adapted for TV and film, full stop, what video games do you feel should be off limits? I think games like Dark Souls, Celeste, and Disco Elysium would never work, as their mechanics are strongly tied to player agency. But what about others? Even ones that you may feel may work, but you hope that they are never adapted." Let me try that again. Even ones that you feel may work, but you hope that they are never adapted. Thank you, Steve.
Thank you, Stephen. At least one of my answers, two of my answers, I think, are games that I'm not saying they should never be adapted because I'm precious about them and I'm trying to keep them safe. I'm saying they shouldn't be adapted because I think they will be rubbish. One of them isn't for me even as a game. Fortnite, right? The temptation has got to be there.
Gonna make a TV show.
Well, so
or
there
a
were
movie.
Headlines some years ago saying that Disney Plus were going to make a Fortnite TV show, and they didn't. But Fortnite, as far as I'm aware, doesn't have any like actual characters that you just do you not just make
they've
your
got,
own?
They've got a
there's
few.
There's a story, kind
is
of.
Is there?
There's like every okay. season there's kind of been like something's happening, like because the map changes.
Well, yeah, and there
like
are sort
the
of
world,
like apocalyptic events and
events
stuff.
And
yeah.
Stuff. But
they do have some original characters, but they're okay. not like, I don't know if they're. Much like we talked about at the start of the podcast, they don't have motivations
yeah.
or agency or
they're
goals.
Not like Overwatch characters.
They're just
they?
Skins.
Well,
basically.
So Overwatch, for example, in contrast, although being a similar game to a certain extent and having similar like a similar fan base and popularity, Overwatch would probably work really well. As
well, I'm a,
a
big fan of their like animated like
yeah, the
short character
that
things.
Done.
I think those are really good. I don't really play the game,
no.
but I think that those are really well done.
It's like TF2 did. Those various little sort of character-based cutscenes and shorts and stuff, and they would work pretty well, I think, as a little animated, you know, character-focused thing. But Fortnite, as far as I'm aware, wouldn't work well. I mean, it shows that some of it's down to ignorance, because I didn't know there was a story or actual characters at all, and evidently there is. Yeah, I think the fact that I've not absorbed that even just through being in the games industry, whereas with Overwatch I have done, despite not having played much Overwatch. Yeah, I think Fortnite would be a terrible idea, even though the temptation will be there with various, like Disney Plus, I think, were saying that they were interested at one point. I don't think Portal should be adapted because, for one thing, you've got a mute protagonist and gameplay-wise, you know, that story is based entirely around gameplay, especially the first game. I mean, the second one has a bit more to it, but really, if you go back and play through Portal 1, it's just test chambers and it's just GLaDOS. Portal 2 has, you know, you go like behind the scenes and you've got Wheatley and there's more interest there and Cave Johnson, so that could maybe work. You know, perhaps you could do a sort of prequel Aperture Science thing, but I certainly think the story of the two Portal games would make pretty bad TV shows. And then also, I think GTA, I can so see Grand Theft Auto being turned into a TV show or a film, and they basically just use the brand name, but then it's just a bunch of random criminal characters, maybe in Liberty City, that was might be what they call it, but it I don't think it would be like attached at all, really, other than by brand name. And I think that would just feel like a bit of a cash in. You know, I'd be maybe a bit more interested if they picked some specific characters from the games, like you know, the GTA 5 gang or previous characters. There's some pretty interesting ones in like other games, Nico and stuff. That might work better, but knowing the way that they would almost certainly take it if they did adapt it into a TV show, I'm saying that shouldn't happen. You know, if they were to do it, they should do it with recognizable and interesting characters, personally, I think. Ashton?
I have a few, one of which I think kind of would lend itself quite well to a TV show, but I think would lose a lot of its charm, being Life is Strange. Mm-hmm. I think that obviously, you know, it is already in episodes and has its kind of own condensed little stories, but I just think it would lose some of its charm because a lot of it is, you know, how you make decisions and what things you say. And obviously you can just be like, Max says the wrong thing, reverses time. Now she says the right thing. But that kind of takes a lot of that like shock out of some of the bits that happen in it. On a similar vein, things that I just think wouldn't work because the player's agency is the important part of the game is Dark Pictures games. You could never make those into TV shows because, I mean, you could take, like, the story of it and make it into a TV show, but
it wouldn't be Dark Pictures.
It would just be a horror show.
Yeah.
Because the whole point is that you make these decisions and the story goes, like, in different ways and it changes every time you play it because you're making different choices and stuff. So they wouldn't work. And also, I think The Outer Worlds wouldn't work as a TV show because you, again, make decisions and affect things in certain ways that make the outcome of the entire game totally different. Like, you can, you know, rebel against the main point in the game and the game, like, ends so much earlier on than it does if you just don't make that decision. And also the fact that you can do, like, the final boss. You can either fight or just like talk to them or avoid it completely. You kind of lose that sense of choice. You could turn the story again into a game, into a TV show, whatever, but I just don't think that it would translate into the game, because the mechanic, the main point of the game isn't there. Like, the person isn't making a decision. So those kind of games, I think, just wouldn't work, because your player agency is just completely gone.
I think that's partly what I think with GTA as well. Like, I'm sure you could do a just a good criminal drama. There are plenty of good ones out there and call it GTA. But it's to do with, like, having that sense of, I've got this sandbox to play in and I can go and cause chaos. That doesn't translate if it's just some characters who aren't you. So, yeah.
I'm honestly open to pretty much any game being adapted to a TV show or film. Like, because I have no hope of them ever being any good. But
The Last of Us was pretty good, though. The first episode was pretty good.
Yes, it was. If it's because ultimately, if it's a good TV show, regardless of whether or not I'm interested in the game, I'll probably watch it. And if it's a game that I'm interested in already, I'll give it a go. So it's just sort of, you know, there's the stakes are low for us, the viewing public. We can just not watch them, for sure. And there's, as I was trying to come up with ones that I think have sort of a bit sacred that I wouldn't necessarily want to see bastardized, for want of a better term, I actually realized, just take your shot.
Yeah.
Just make it. See if it's any good, because Fallout's getting a TV show and that could be rubbish or it could be great. And you make a lot of decisions in that game and can affect the outcome and stuff like that. We now have the technology on streaming services like Netflix to do choose your own TV show. So a Dark Pictures game could work, although then you're entering the territory of what ultimately
it's
then is the difference
the same
between the game and the TV show. But I agree with you, Peter. I put GTA, Saints Row, any crime sandbox is just going to be potentially a really stupid action movie that has nothing to do with the games, unless they base it heavily on a plot. But then you're going to be going from these really... The experience of GTA and Saints Row is so unique in that you go from, not so much with Saints Row, but certainly with GTA, you go from oftentimes quite serious cutscenes and story moments to walking into the street and getting hit by a taxi and then having to get up. It's basically the Ryan Reynolds film, was it Free Guy?
Yeah.
That's basically what a GTA film or TV show would have to be, unless it was a really grounded, gritty, episodic TV show. And then it's probably going to turn off most of the fans of GTA anyway, so it's not really going to be what they want. They're making a Gran Turismo movie, and if they can make a Gran Turismo movie, no sports game is off limits. They could make a FIFA movie quite easily about a rookie footballer who rises up through the ranks and have loads of cameos. It'd be terrible. It'd be really self-flagellating, I would imagine. Is that the right term?
I don't know.
I don't think that's right.
Masturbatory.
Masturbatory is what I want. Yeah. So yes, it is what I want. and so FIFA already did like a documentary sort of film about themselves, didn't they? About the founding of FIFA. And it was like, oh, aren't we amazing? And all the critics panned it. It would be like that. And if FIFA are going to do it, you don't flip in the likes of WWE are going to do the same thing where you have some sort of weird TV series. Again, it might be interactive where you're a rookie and you have to make decisions about, I don't know. There's a lot of games that could be adapted into movies that genuinely wouldn't work. But for the most part, give it a go. If it's got a story, or even if it hasn't, as is the case with Gran Turismo, why not? Do whatever you want, because the Last of Us TV show is excellent, but obviously that is adapting an already excellent story. So not everyone, not every franchise has that behind them. But, you know, do it. Give it a go.
I agree that games that do have a lot of agency don't. That in itself isn't a reason not to make a TV series. So, for example, Dark Pictures, I think that is tied so much to the fact that it's like built around, oh, this is a choose your own adventure story. So I don't think that would work. But whereas I think Fallout, I agree, could work, because although, again, it's an RPG and they sell it quite heavily on creating your own character, it's just got a really interesting world and a setting, and same with Elder Scrolls. So I think those games, and Fable even, could work pretty well, because at least it's got that world to carry it, whereas Dark Pictures changes every time. Characters are always different. The only thing that remains the same is Dr. Anal. and yes. his and Hill. And some of the cast yeah. as well. You see the same faces, but yeah, I was going to say something else as well, but I've forgotten it now. But yeah, I think. Oh yeah, I think I was going to say I agree with you, Ben, in that like I can't think of any that were too sacred. Like anything where I went through all like my favorite like franchises and games in my head, and I'm sure that like a Crash Bandicoot animated TV show could be rubbish, and they were going to make one, and there's like bits of test footage out there, and it could be really good, but like I'd rather they just had a go, you know, and just did it. So I couldn't think of any that were too sacred.
No, me neither.
Yeah. Make it. Throw it all at the wall, see what sticks. Yeah. I want Uwe Boll directed trash heaps for the rest of time.
Has anyone watched the Halo TV show?
No.
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 Does anybody know anyone who's watched the Halo TV show? My dad watched
it. Really?
He liked it.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
Is he a Halo fan?
No. He didn't know it was based on a video game. Mm. He said, oh, we've been watching a new show this week. I said, what?
It's called Halo.
It's called Halo.
Hello.
It's called Halo. And I was
I would have watched it if it had been just an adaptation of the first game. I think that's got a great story and a great setting, great characters.
Is it just a completely different story?
Yeah, I think it's set before it, but also it, like, I think it actually deviates from...
He takes his helmet off and he, like, has romantic relationships and stuff, which isn't very nice.
Although I think it's set before, it does stuff that I think, like, breaks lore that's ahead of it, like, sort of, like, retcon stuff. Yeah, yeah. I think. I've not seen it, but I've seen complaints about it. So it's a shame.
Mm. It's a shame. But The Last of Us TV show, very, very good. Mm-hmm. Ashton and I have watched it. Peter, I think you're waiting until
I'm going to wait until it's all out and then watch it in, you know, over a couple of weeks.
Yeah, yeah. Very, very good. Very
it's
promising.
It's really annoying because that means we can't talk about it.
Whoa. Well,
we can, just not.
Well, we can, but we have to talk about it privately so not to spoil it for Peter in case something happens.
Yeah.
How I mean, selfish of you.
I've got an idea of what's going to happen in it. There's probably, well, I mean, maybe there will be
I've
something.
I've got a vague idea of the story of the last
No, but I mean, up to the, I don't know obviously how far up they're going through the story, but, you know, up until whatever point they choose, I've got a rough idea of what's going to be happening.
No.
It's good.
It's really good.
It's really good. It's been a long time since I've, like, probably since House of the Dragon that I've sat down and just, like, watched a drama. Mm. And it's good stuff. It's good. I like it a lot.
Do you know how many episodes there are of the series?
No, probably 10.
Yeah.
Around there, I'd have thought. I mean, well, actually, it's HBO. So
actually,
it might
I think
be
it's
like...
9 episodes, I think, I read, maybe.
Okay. There we are.
Well,
one of those ones.
You can hold on for...
9 weeks.
2 months.
You're joking. That's how long it takes to have a baby, Peter.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So
if you're a hamster,
get your head out of your ass, Austin. Join us in the 21st to 21st century.
Yeah.
Yes.
I don't have to keep waiting week on week for a new episode. I say that, but I'll watch like Star Wars shows.
Yeah.
It's really good though, and everyone should watch it.
It also means I can pay for if I pay for Sky, I can just pay for it for like a month and watch.
Yeah, I'll get a free trial.
I'll get a free free trial
and just binge it and then get out of there. Exactly. That's how this works.
Pay for it for like 2 months straight.
I just use my dad's.
Yeah.
Go log into Sky so I can watch my video game.
Watch Halo.
Yeah.
Watch Halo. Thank you so much for listening, everybody/watching. We really appreciate all of you. Stick around to the end of the plugs here so we can tell you what's coming out this week. Peter, what's the place where people can go on the internet, please?
Team Triple Jump everywhere. YouTube.com and twitch.tv/Team Triple Jump for all our videos and our live streams. We stream on YouTube as well as Twitch. And when we're streaming on YouTube as well as Twitch, we are modded by Lord Brotovich, Trialing Badger and Mr. Black. If you've got Amazon Prime, part of that bundle that you're already paying for includes a free Twitch sub. So spend that on us if you would like to, please. Oh. Twitter.com and Facebook.com/Team Triple Jump. You can go there for video and live stream announcements, legacy video content, highlights of the week from the streams, bits of news, all kinds of things, all posted by Fraser and us sometimes. Thank you, Fraser, for looking after those. TikTok.com/@Team Triple Jump. Ashton is posting TikToks there. I've been in one of them recently and maybe more. And Patreon.
I haven't snuck one of you. You've not been in any other ones without your consent.
No, I mean, maybe there will be more soon.
Oh, there isn't. There is a couple more on there. No.
Okay. And patreon.com/Team Triple Jump. There are loads of different tiers with loads of different rewards available. So head over there and have a look. You'll be able to ask questions on this podcast for one thing.
Yes. Tell us if you're a postal worker.
Mm. Yes.
preferably four of you. We have a website, triplej.mup, triplej.mp. Spells jump, it's very clever. If you want to join our Discord, go to triplej.mup/Discord, chat with our wonderful community. On Discord, we're modded by Jack, Joe, Tori, and Hollow Eyes. And if you say to do something, bloody well do it, all right? Don't answer back, just do it. If you want to listen to the podcast in its audio forms, go to triplej.mup/podcast. If you want to check out one of our live stream VODs, if you missed one during the week, go to triplej.mup/VODs. If you want to book a cameo from any of us or James Jenkins, you go to triplej.mup/cameo. And if you want to buy some sick and cool merch like this,
the black version of this,
go to triplejumpshop.com and make sure you're tagging at triplejumpshop in your post when you get your merch through, and tag us too, and make sure you're following at Triple Jump Shop on Twitter for the latest merch announcements.
Absolutely. Why not follow Peter and Ashton on Twitter, Instagram, and do you want me to keep plugging your Hive? Are you using the Hive?
I haven't reinstalled on my new phone yet, so.
Peter, are you using your Hive?
No, it keeps breaking. Okay. I've been trying to use it, but.
Well, you can follow them on Hive as well, at that Peter Austin and at Scrambled Ashton, and myself just on Twitter at confused_dude. We do lists every Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, streams every Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Thursday being the joint stream.
Blaze it.
On YouTube, the other days being solo streams on Twitch. Worst Games Ever is fortnightly, Friday for patrons of a certain tier, Sunday for everyone else. We do the podcast every Saturday and there's shows all the bloody time. Come check them out. We'd appreciate it. Thank you very much. Why not leave a 5-star review on your platform of choice? It helps something to do with Al Gore's rhythms and it really does help and it's free to do. And also it's free to listen. So please go and leave us a 5-star review. Thank you so much. Out this week, it is the final work of the prolific Philip J. Reed. Unfortunately, we have sadly reached that point where this will be the final piece of work that Philip worked on for us, released on the channel. That is, of course, we've hinted at it a couple of times on Twitter about it being quite an amusing final send-off for Philip, because he really detested Garfield and playing the Garfield games. But he has ranked every single Garfield video game from worst to best. That's available on the channel right now. Go and watch it and share it around as well. We'd appreciate it. It's also Worst Games Ever Week.
It is. What was it? Nickelodeon, Jimmy Neutron, Boy Genius, Attack of the Twonkies.
Yes.
Which isn't a slur, even though it sounds like one.
Yeah. So that was available on Saturday, on Friday, yesterday, if you're listening to the podcast soon after it goes out, and available on Patreon on Friday. And it's available. Will I get to the end
of
this
sentence?
You're
doing such a good job.
Come on.
Available for everyone else tomorrow.
Sunday,
if you're listening on Saturday.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Also, I believe, is there a job listing still live currently?
Yes, there is. I think it might end on Sunday. What's the date on Sunday? Yes, I believe that is correct.
The 22nd or 3rd. 22nd is the 22nd.
If you'd like to apply to be one of our freelance video editors, go to triplej.mup. It's probably /careers, but if you scroll down, the little button.
Yeah.
Says careers, and you'll see the job listing there. So quick, hurry. And if you've been kicking your heels about applying or you're halfway through your application, get it sent
in. Get it done.
Or it might be too late. Please don't send anything after the Sunday. The job listing may not be taken down immediately, but it does close on Sunday. So please don't send anything after that time.
And give us a couple of days to look through all of the applicants before we get back to you. Because we will have, I'm sure people will be desperate to hear on Monday, and we might not get back to you on Monday, but we will. We message everyone with a yes or a no, so you will hear something.
You will, unless you're a chancer who sends a stupid email, at which point you don't get a response. And it does happen. And also make sure you're sending it to the right email address. I don't know why this is so bloody hard, but we had someone reply in the Twitter thread with their portfolio. That always happens because people just search with keywords and they don't know anything about the job. But then someone sent a full application to the completely wrong email address. Please just check. It says it all in the listing. So go do that. Not a great first impression. That's what I'm saying.
Don't make Ben Mardy.
It's not a fantastic first impression that you sent it to the wrong email address. Okay? So come on, guys. Get it together.
For clarity on what the chances are probably not, they're not you because you're listening to the podcast right now. A chancer is someone who sends us a template email and they say, I've not done the sample. Here's just my portfolio.
Yeah, exactly. Someone who's just, Or we have had people in the past apply and just say, I think I'd be really good. Because, and also, I can't really be asked to move to Newcastle, so maybe
you have to for this
maybe
job,
I could do it remote. You know, just people who aren't taking it. You know, you get all sorts. You're doing great though, I'm sure.
Yeah, I'm
just
sure.
Just read the bloody ad. That's all we're asking. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. There's just enough time to hear from the sponsor one more time this week.
Yes, it's you play as Pat in your blue suit, your red van, your black and white cat, and you're in a great big castle. That's right. It's Fort Postman. And there's three more of you, and then you are four postmen.
Yes.
Maybe.
We'll find out next week.
Coming on Monday.
Thank you so much for listening, everybody. We will see you next week. Look after yourselves.
Bye. Bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.